It's so important for leaders at the top of organizations to keep learning, stay sharp, grow their networks. To help our audience better do this in a more simplified, personalized, and meaningful way, Becker's Healthcare has launched MyBHC. It's your trusted Becker's Healthcare experience and more, with content, connections, events, and learning opportunities. Join the community free of charge at www.my.beckershospitalreview.com, and we'll see you there.
This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by a brilliant entrepreneur. We're joined today by Ashish Shah. Ashish is the founder, the CEO of a company called Dina. He's going to tell us what Dina does, how it got started, a little bit about his career, maybe a little bit about his wrestling career, and a little bit more. Ashish, can you take a moment and introduce yourself and tell us about the company, about Dina?
Yeah, Scott, thanks again for having me on the podcast. Big fan of it. Dina is a digital healthcare company that's focused on building a marketplace and a network for health plan navigators to guide mainly those covered by Medicare or Medicaid to be able to activate everything from post-acute care services all the way through to supplemental benefits. And in some cases for the dually eligible population, LTSS services as well. Company was founded in 2015. And we were bootstrapped for a little bit, but we've been fortunate to be able to bring on some great outside investors throughout the journey. And, from the time that we started the business to now, the market has evolved quite a bit. And I think COVID had a little bit to do with that as well.
And talk about health plan navigation. Who's the person who's navigating and working with Dina? Who does Dina work with specifically, or who's the target for using Dina?
Yeah, so the person that we're ultimately equipping right now is every health plan, whether it's a Medicare Advantage plan or a Managed Medicaid plan or D-SNP, for example, employs or may even delegate out to a care coordination team that has member navigators, authorization professionals or authorization assistants, all the way to those who may actually be the coordinators. Sometimes these folks are RNs. Oftentimes they're social workers who have been really trained to look holistically on behalf of what a member needs. And part of our job is to really make their life much easier. Of course, there are medical benefits and services that need to get coordinated from time to time. Largely, the provider network takes that on for a typical health plan. But as it relates to these emerging supplemental benefits, things like in-home services, companion care, family caregiver relief through respite services, transport or food. Many of these things are very new, unfamiliar to the traditional healthcare landscape. And so part of our job is to make life easier for those navigators to be able to understand who provides what and who can actually deliver on that particular need for a member.
And you've now founded this business 8 years ago or so, which is a lifetime in the time of in the business of a startup and an emerging company. So congratulations. Talk about what was it like starting a company? Was that very stressful, exciting, anxiety provoking? Some of the thoughts around starting a digital technology company before digital technology and health was a thing. Talk a little bit about that period of time.
Yeah, it was definitely all of those emotions, Scott. I was fortunate that I was a part of a great team before founding Dina. I was at a company called Medicity, which was a market leader in the healthcare interoperability landscape. And we just had a fantastic business, fantastic team, wonderful customers. In many ways, that really, I thought, did a nice job preparing me for this next step in founding Dina. In the beginning, there was a lot of excitement, enthusiasm. But as you get a little bit deeper into it, you have to take things from concept down to reality. And ultimately, you need to have really great customers and partners to help begin to fulfill the vision of why you started that. And I would say that my journey had all of those emotions. Again, a lot of enthusiasm in the beginning, a little bit of anxiety and stress shortly after that moment as you're starting to put things together. Because you're really a small team out of the gate. At least we were. There was two of us. And you're really trying to do something pretty remarkable in the early days. So you have to stay focused and you have to be able to take people's feedback appropriately and apply it to ultimately what you're trying to craft.
As you develop software and technology, How soon into the journey, when you're constantly working, getting the product better and better, then you're working, commercializing, finding customers, what's that sort of mix of both? And how quickly do you start looking at commercialization so you don't just end up with idea, then product, but no customers? How quickly do you start really working with potential customers as you develop a software or digital technology company?
For us, it was immediate. And I think you have to do a little bit of research. You have to have a concept. You know, I'm fortunate that I'm technology trained, so I was able to kind of get us started just being a former CTO. But we very quickly got right to a customer prospect site. Now, there wasn't a paid commercial agreement or anything along those lines, but being able to have access where you could pressure test the idea, the value proposition, learn from the real world boots on the ground experience, I think is one of the most important things that any company can be doing, not only in the beginning, but I think throughout the life of the company. If you're not connected into the market with customers, with people who will use the technology to ultimately do good, and then being relentless about processing that feedback so that you can actually improve the overall experience that you're trying to unlock, I think you're just pushing off, you know, you're getting further away from what I think ultimately every business needs to do, which is ultimately serve customers.
And couldn't agree more. And talk about this year, 2023. What are you most focused on and excited about as we move to the second half of this year?
Yes, I think one of the most things I'm most excited about is if you look at the data just came out, we see now north of 50% of Medicare beneficiaries have selected a Medicare Advantage plan. We're at a tipping point. You know, we're now going to continue to see acceleration of people electing to enroll into those types of plans. One of the things that's really driving that type of enrollment is a differentiated experience from Medicare fee-for-service. And so these supplemental benefits, you know, things like in-home services, access to healthy meals, transport, perhaps addressing some challenges with housing or security or home modification, is really attracting membership in. If we're looking at this data in 2020, there's about a couple hundred health plans, Medicare Advantage plans that were offering in-home services of benefit. In 2023, that's grown 5x. We're now north of 1,100 to 1,200 health plans that are offering just that single benefit alone. It's often coupled with food, transport, and other things as well. And so I'm really excited that the market has very, very much arrived now for what we're doing, but it is about execution. I think the plans not only are recognizing that these benefits can have great value, not only for their core business, but actually are ultimately great for the member and their family. Now the next step is to ensure that people have access, much like building any other type of network in the health plan landscape. Do you have adequate number of providers that can fulfill that particular benefit? Can the member access it in a timely manner? But I think there's also a really neat opportunity to bring data back from those providers in a way that really equips health plans to continually address challenges of health equity as well as social determinants of health.
No, it's really kind of fascinating. I guess as you've had this explosion in Medicare Advantage plans, Medicaid managed care plans, and really everything else, continued movement towards value-based care, you could call it, or at least in this case, Medicare Advantage, those Medicare Advantage plans are now looking for advantages in how they commercialize to their members and take care of their members and differentiating factors, and I guess better and better at navigating is a key part of that. As you look at Medicare Advantage become more than 50%, there's of course this great debate out there as to whether that's good or bad. The politics on it have gone back and forth, Trump for it, then Biden against it, then Biden for it. At the end of the day, it's a fascinating evolution and critical to the business of Dana, I take it. But at the same time, there's all these studies that show that the Medicare Advantages are not necessarily saving the government money. Any bigger perspectives on those kinds of trends of movement towards Medicare Advantage? Or is it really, it doesn't really matter because you have to operate with this environment regardless. And so it might be a good philosophical discussion, but the real key is making sure whatever is going on, that people are using it right. I mean, how do you sort of look at some of those issues?
Yeah, I think it's there's no rolling it back. And, you know, without getting into any of the politics of it, it is an option. I mean, clearly 50% of the beneficiaries have elected to enroll into it. Now, I think the plans have, you know, they have the challenge to make sure it's a superior product to Medicare fee-for-service. And if it is ultimately and does its job in terms of delighting members, meeting them where they're what they want in terms of the broader marketplace experience, and helps curb the broader cost challenges that the federal government has, then I think it clearly is a winner, and then perhaps can even be leveraged for more than just managing Medicare beneficiaries. So I think this is out there. I think people are I think we're early in terms of understanding what the long-term implications are going to be here. But you know, Scott, you know this. I mean, now there's north of 10 to 11,000 people who are turning Medicare eligible every single day. That will continue for the next 25 to 30 years. So this is a really important part of our society here, at least in the U.S. And, you know, I think the impact that Medicare Advantage can have is really be a great partner back with the federal government and making sure that our seniors are really well taken care of, but we do it in a cost-conscious way. And I think a lot of the innovation that CMS has really empowered the plans through its VBID, value-based insurance design program, to be able to experiment with these new benefits is a perfect example of a public-private partnership.
You have just an absolutely great perspective on this, Ashish. Let me ask you one other question, and really the last question of the day, I promise, is take a moment on, you've had this great entrepreneurial career. It's amazing what you've accomplished. Take a moment on any advice you would give to emerging leaders, emerging founders. What would you tell somebody who's trying to do what you did or trying to build a business, you know, as a startup?
It's a really great question. I think about a lot of different things from day to day, but you know, first and foremost, you need to have a deep connection to the problem or the business that you're trying to launch. You know, there's a lot of, as you know, ups and downs on a journey like this. And when everything's great, it's great. But when things are tough, you need to really lean on why you're doing this to begin with. So really being committed and passionate about what you do, I think is something that I think about a lot. Clarity on vision, the big picture, what are you really after and why? I think is important, but you have to be really flexible on strategy and how you get there, especially when you're building a business and market conditions change. I mean, you know, earlier this year, I'll tell you, regional bank failures was not in my 2023 plan. And in 2020, you know, global shutdown due to COVID definitely wasn't my plan. So flexibility, I think, is really important for businesses of all shapes and sizes. And then at the end of the day, everything in business is about people. And so building an absolutely wonderful team of people who buy into the vision, but have the flexibility to be able to execute that vision and are empowered to do so. We're a digital healthcare product, but without our people, we have no products and we have no service to our customers. So just always do right by your people. That ultimately means that they'll do a great job for your customers and what we're ultimately after, which is taking care of seniors at scale.
No, I think just a wonderful perspective. And I love this concept to start with, a deep connection to what you're doing and deep clarity about what you're actually trying to accomplish, what problem you're trying to solve. Because so many people start a business because they want to start a business, not because they're really trying to solve a specific problem. And at the end of the day, when you're truly solving a problem, just a much greater chance of serious success and real need in the marketplace. Ashish, I want to thank you for joining us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. What a pleasure getting to visit with you, getting to know you and learn more about Dina. Thank you so much for joining us.
I appreciate the opportunity to be on the show. Big fan, and thanks again.